This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher on VSiN, the sports betting network.
All right, Sharp Money ready to go on this Thursday, August 1st, as we start a new month. Joe Serralo in for Patrick Maher, like I've been all week, alongside Dustin Sweetelson. And Dustin, we've waited all offseason, all summer for this. Football is back. The Hall of Fame game tonight, the Chicago Bears and the Houston Texans facing off in Canton, Ohio. It is also the day of our college football betting guide release right here at VSiN. So we're going to have some of our internal guys on the show to talk about their picks, talk about the betting guide. We're going to go external to my guy, Dan Orlovsky, former NFL quarterback, to break down, you know, what we could expect from two quarterbacks who may not be playing tonight, but have a lot of buzz around them in Caleb Williams of the Chicago Bears, CJ Stroud of the Houston Texans. Can't wait to talk to Dan. Dustin, how are you today, man?
I'm approaching the point where I need to delete Hinge and I need to delete Bumble and Tinder and like apps, just because it's not because I'm having success. It's not because I found love. It's because we're now entering that window of my life every year where I sacrifice all of these things, finding a romantic partner, because football is more important. Thursdays are now blocked off going forward. In a few weeks, Saturdays will be blocked off going forward. Shortly after that, we will lose Sundays. I will lose Mondays, and I will lose Thursdays with Thursday Night Football. Soon we'll have Maction along the way, and next thing you know, we'll be looking up, and it's November, and we're knee-deep in this thing. It's a beautiful time of year. We all made it. We're all going to be okay. We got through July. Football is finally upon us.
I mean, Dustin, you just can't justify meeting for casual drinks on a Tuesday evening when there is Maction on the line. I will say, though, out of all the apps you named, give Christian Mingle a shot, man. I feel like you'd be really popular on there.
I would not be, because I'm on J-Swipe because I'm Jewish. So I would not be good on that. I have a better shot on Farmers Only than I do on Christian Mingle.
A New York Jew? Who would have thought those existed? I've never met one in my life growing up on the North Shore of Long Island. Dustin, I can't wait for these two teams that we're seeing tonight, man. Now, I'll be the first to admit, I could not care less about preseason football. I could not care less about the Hall of Fame game itself. But these are, I would say, two of the more intriguing, more exciting teams for the upcoming season as a whole that we're about to see face off tonight. I'm curious, is there anyone that you're expecting to play tonight that intrigues you, that you'll be looking out for? Because obviously Caleb and CJ Stroud aren't going to be suiting up.
Yeah, so I'm kind of in the opposite camp. I'm excited for preseason games because I think in the chaos, that's where the opportunities present themselves from a betting perspective. So when I look at tonight, there does seem to be an opportunity for me to back Houston. I look at the quarterbacks we're going to see, right? Chicago, Tyson Bagent. He had a couple moments as a backup, but behind him is Brett Rippon and Austin Reed. Not a lot of experience. Therefore, I don't think they're going to let Tyson Bagent potentially ruin the season and get hurt here in case something happens to Caleb, right? Tyson Bagent is too valuable to the Bears at the moment. When I look at the Texans have a lot of experience at backup quarterback. That's the name of the game here. Davis Mills, 26 career starts. Case Keenum, 66. Tim Boyle, 20. Whether they're or not they're good quarterbacks is besides the point, right? It's more these guys know how to go through a real game situation. And when it comes to betting the preseason, it's the only time we can take these coaches at face value. It's the only time they're being honest with us, because these games actually don't matter to them. It matters to a degree in evaluating some of their talent, but it's the only time they don't care what their opponent knows. Right? During the regular season, you'll hear coaches compliment players on the other team. That is a mind game to soften them up a bit. You will hear coaches not be transparent about guys with injuries and the depth chart and battles and how much time someone's going to see. That is gamesmanship that we see in the regular season. That all goes out the window here in the exhibition season and the preseason. Because of that, I do think it creates some opportunities to win some bets.
Now, that's a pretty interesting take regarding the quarterbacks, because when I look at the QBs on the roster who are going to be suiting up tonight, I almost had an inverse thought to yours, where I look at Bagent, and this is a young kid who got a few opportunities last year to suit up as the starter for Chicago, impressed people at times, looked like, you know, a rookie at others, but I look at him and he actually intrigues me more in this game. He, to me, is someone who, even though he should be the first backup to Caleb this year for Chicago, I feel like he might come into this a little chippy, looking to prove something. I mean, look, he did get real regular season time and action last year, but he's still so young and still so inexperienced that I'm almost curious to see what Bajent is going to go out there and try to do tonight. Whereas Houston has much more experience in their quarterback room outside of their starter, Davis Mills, Case Keenum. But to me, someone like Davis Mills, I almost feel like he's, I don't know if disgusted is the right word, disinterested, right? Like Davis Mills, there's an element to him that feels like he's been done wrong by Houston because they didn't really try to go all in when he was the starting quarterback. Now they do for CJ. They put a team around CJ. They put weapons around him. I don't know if Davis Mills or Case Keenum feel like they have anything that they need to prove tonight, whereas Bajent might go out there and let it rip, play loose, play a little dangerous. To me, I'd almost be looking for Bajent more so than the quarterbacks in Houston's room.
So I get where you're coming from, but I think because Chicago didn't go out and add a veteran, right? They didn't go add someone who can help Caleb in the film room. They didn't add someone with a lot of experience. I think because of that, Bajent is locked in as that number two, and he doesn't have to prove anything tonight. He actually met with the media earlier in the week and talked about the Bears not bringing in another backup for this season.
Yeah, you know, I didn't really think too much about it. I was too busy grinding my absolute face off in the offseason.
The hardest grinding your face off thing that you did?
June 19th, shout out to my one of my best friends, Derek Gallagher, 1 mile burpee broad jump. Hour and 7 minutes. Let's go.
Is that burpee for a mile?
Burpee broad jump. 1 mile.
How many calories do you burn out?
So to your point, he is a hardo. Like, he's going to go hard.
Wow.
I agree with you. Like, the workout's crazy. But I do think there is a level of – they know what they have in Tyson Bajent, a Division II guy who showed some athleticism, showed a lot of ability a year ago. And really, if he gets hurt, Brett Rypien is your number two. That is not a situation the Chicago Bears want to be in because let's say we live in a world where Caleb Williams gets injured. Matt Eberflus will still be judged on the results of the season and how he handles that. I would much rather handle that with a known upside commodity in Tyson Bajent than I would with Brett Rypien, who I'm kind of aware of who he is.
Dustin, as intrigued as I am by everything you just said, I'm still struggling to wrap my mind around 1 mile of burpees and broad jumps. That is bizarre to me. I can't fathom. As someone who went through two-a-days in high school football practice, as someone who, you know, I hated East-West, where you, like, jog the goal line, sprint the 5, jog the 10, sprint the 15. Yeah. A mile of burpees and broad jumps. And, by the way, I think it's funny he threw in the date there, June 19th, because my June 19th was the absolute opposite. I was turning 26, drinking margaritas and eating a charcuterie board by a pool on June 19th. I had a much better June 19th than Tyson Bajent. But I guess that's why he's getting paid the big bucks right now, because he was grinding it on the 19th. I mean, that sounds physically painful.
No,
how many burpees could you do?
I don't even know what a burpee is. You know what a burpee is? When I chug a Coke too quick. That's what a burpee is for your boy. Some notes on tonight's game, though. The Bears opened 2-point favorites. Total was 33. It dropped down to 31. I looked this morning. It was at 30 with a flip in the line. Texans laying 2 now. That came after the Bears earlier in the week announced that they would not be playing their starters. And we'll have some great trends and notes throughout the show that Steve Mackinnon put out at VSiN.com. That I think are really helpful when it comes to betting this game. I also should note that there is some weather that could play a role in this contest. Uh-oh. And that is not an NFL regulation field there in Canton, Ohio. You have to remember where this game's being played, you know, in that high school field in Canton. And if they end up getting the rain that couldn't possibly be there, that could really mess with how the teams approach this in trying to get out of game one of the preseason without any major injuries.
Yeah, I definitely would expect a more conservative approach to this game. You know, one thing, because when we talk about quarterbacks, right, I was leaning towards Bajent being a hardo going out there and trying to prove something tonight. One thing that might make me lean back towards Houston a little bit is coaching in this one. Now, I'm not saying Matt Eberflus is a guy who has job security or is safe in any sense because he hasn't done anything as head coach of the Bears. But D'Amico, who obviously has more job security than Eberflus does at this point, I think, D'Amico Ryans is still a young head coach, and he's so meticulous, and his attention to detail is so strong. He strikes me as the kind of guy, even in a meaningless preseason game, to have his team motivated, up and ready. I'd feel like I could see Ryans more so treating this like a regular season game than I could Eberflus. And what's really interesting about these two teams, last three preseasons, Dustin, both of them really good against the number. Houston 7-2, Chicago 6-2-1 against the spread last three postseasons.
Yep, and then we've got D'Amico Ryans 2-1, his one stint here in exhibition preseason football. Matt Eberflus on the other side, 3-0, and then 1-2. So we're looking at a 4-2 overall record in the preseason. They both like winning preseason games, which does make this kind of interesting.
Yeah, it absolutely does. And I think when you look at the rest of the roster right now, Chicago, no starters playing. Houston, I'm not sure. Have they announced that no starters are going to be seeing action? Or are they going to run some young
guys? We don't really know, but I would anticipate that we're not going to see their starters very much tonight. There's no point in it. There's no point in risking it. There's too much on the line. I can't imagine we see C.J. Stroud for even one snap.
Oh, no shot Stroud's going to be out there. Does that make you think, not just the quarterbacks, but the rest of the roster quickly here, you lean under? It opened at 33. It's now 31. Are you still going to go under a low number like that?
The weather is impacting this. If the weather was perfect, my thought was over, just based looking at some recent results. Because of that weather, because of everything at play, you have to think under.
Yeah, last 2 years, they've gone for 35 or more. Prior to that, 19, 24. Back here on Sharp Money as we keep it moving. Hour one here. Joe Cirillo in for Patrick Maher all week alongside Dustin Sweetelson. And as promised, we're going to take it to the Progressive guest line and welcome in one of my favorite people, former NFL quarterback for a dozen years, currently killing it over at ESPN, Dan Orlovsky. Dan, how you doing, man?
I'm doing good, bud. How are you doing, man?
I'm great. It's great to have you back on, man. This is a nice little full circle moment from my college radio show, 6 years ago already, now to the big leagues. It's great to have you on. And I want to talk about a kid that I think you and I both love. Now, year two, his team is playing tonight, Dan. It's C.J. Stroud. I've been getting a hard time from a lot of people because I don't see Houston taking a step back this year. I know the schedule is tougher. I know there's film on Stroud and company now. But I think the Texans are primed for a real run. What's your outlook for CJ and the Texans in year two?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I've said all offseason that I think the Texans are trying to become the Bengals from a couple of years ago, where very early on they were like, oh, we got one. And not just a good player. We got a guy that, you know, can take us to the Super Bowl and win one. And that's why you saw the offseason that they had. You know, and I've said that the success of CJ and this team and offense last year was a little bit of a mirage because he was so good, but even better on third downs. And they weren't good offensively on first down, ran the football not productively, and it really put him in bad situations. And he was still that good. And so if they're able to just be a little bit better on those early downs, because you're just not going to survive in the NFL. I don't care how good you are, you know, he's 3rd and 7 plus. Oh, great. Our quarterback was 7 of 10 on third down. We win. So you're not going to survive in the league like that. So if they could be a little bit better on early downs, I think he and that offense will be even better. And, you know, the additions that they made onto their defense, you know, Danielle Hunter led the NFL in negative plays last year. So Stingley could be one of the best cover corners that we have in the league. So, respectfully, the schedule being difficult, this team is very similar to what the Bengals were when they went to the Super Bowl against the Los Angeles Rams.
Dan, I have to ask you about the mentality because you've been in these locker rooms. You've lived the life of preparing for all these games. And my concern with Houston, because I love everything they've done, everything you listed, I think they're one of the most exciting teams we've seen in a while in the NFL. But you know how these defensive coordinators are. They're psychopaths. They sit there all offseason dissecting the film. How do you expect Houston to be attacked by defense this year? And how do you expect Bobby Slowick to kind of counter that?
Yeah, so it's a great question. I think there's two things that helps Houston in this situation. So Bobby Slowick comes from San Francisco under Kyle Shanahan. So that tree, a couple of things. One, that scheme that came from his father, Mike Shanahan, and Gary Kubiak, and then Kyle and Sean McVay, it's been around the NFL for 50 years. And it's not the scheme schematically that is, I guess, quote unquote, difficult to defend. They're not reinventing football plays. It is the way that that scheme is so attached to every play in the playbook. And it's really the great illusion of, are you running it? Are you play action? Is it quick game? Is it a screen? Everything looks the same. And that has been the case for 40 or 50 years when you're good at it. Slowick is. And so that keeps defenses very hesitant and on their heels. The second thing is, you have to be diversified on offense, both in people and what those people can do, to keep defensive coordinators from really being able to know your tendencies and pick up on some of the things that give them matchup advantages. So that's why I like Houston's offensive skill set, is you're talking Dalton Schultz and Brevin Jordan at tight end. Two different players, but they're athletic. They can work the middle of the field. But what tight end do you want to treat as a blocker? What tight end do you want to treat as a pass catcher? Nico Collins has become a real number one wide receiver that you've got to have somebody that can play man-to-man against them. And then Stephon Diggs is the guy that can work in the zones and really be a high-volume pass-catching guy. Tank Dell is the vertical threat. And so you have all these different pieces that really thrive in very specific roles that you have to be able to handle when it comes to the personnel that you match up with. And you don't necessarily – you can't cover everyone type of thing. So I think the scheme with the way that it's kind of connected and then the people, you know, really kind of counters some of the philosophy behind getting the information on the quarterback.
He's Dan Orlovsky from ESPN joining us now on the Progressive Guest Line. Dan, you put out a tweet this morning about Jared Goff, and you noted that he has led four top five offenses in the past 7 seasons. This is a guy who I think continuously gets disrespected. I made my pick official, putting in a bet on him at 27-1 2 weeks ago to be the MVP this upcoming season. That's how much I believe in Goff, how I believe in the Lions. Why can he finally break the narrative and win the MVP this year?
Because their offense is going to be just as good, if not better. You know, I mean, the addition of Jameson Williams, having the offseason, the draft pick 2 years ago in the first round out of Bama that's been hurt and suspended, him having a full offseason and how fast he is. I mean, his offense is fantastic. If Jared Goff was drafted by the Lions, he would have won MVP. And their offense, the way that he's performed, I mean, just since his last 2 years in Detroit, they have 109 touchdowns as an offense and they have 109 punts. That's not normal. That is astronomical. And, you know, I just think that he has performed at such a highly consistent level. I love the vet on him. He's obviously going to have to overcome some other names that are attached to that award or expectations of it. So the way they can run it, the way that he operates their play action game, the different pieces that they have, I think they're going to win the NFC. So you got to be a really good quarterback on the winning team to win that award. I think he'll be right in that conversation.
Dan, let's stay in that division, the Green Bay Packers, a guy that I know you were around in your playing days in Matt LaFleur. I don't know anything about play calling. I don't know anything about breaking down film, but I can tell you this. What I saw from him and his offense was some of the most inspired offensive play calling I've seen in a while. What is it that he does that is special, and how is it able to be repeated this year?
Yeah, I think that the thing that Matt does is, like, he takes a bunch of different, you know, schemes that he's been a part of that generated from the same thing. I mean, it's a little bit what I was speaking about with the Shanahan tree. Like, he's been a part of Kyle Shanahan. He's been a part of Gary Kubiak. He's been a part of Sean McVay. And those all those guys run very similar systems, but he puts his own spin on it. Now, a little bit was the Green Bay personnel with, you know, a bunch of young receivers that have, you know, speed and two backs that are really good out of the backfield catching the football. I think his RPO game is fantastic, both in the horizontal RPO, meaning, you know, you get RPOs that are switched sides on the sideline and some are down the field, the vertical RPOs. So there's a lot of it that can be repeated. I think the best thing that he did last year was commit to protecting Jordan Love. You know, like, a lot of times teams want to run certain pass concepts, but they don't really, you know, Matt always starts with, can we block these people we're playing against? If we can, okay, what different plays can we get to? If we can't, can we change the protection or put more people to the protection to make sure we can? And if so, how? And I think that's the thing that really stood out and was really important last year. And he's always going to believe in that. Like, you got to block the play first, you know, and if you can't block the play, don't call it. And so I think that's a consistent theme. I think that's very repeatable for him. And they're loaded on offense too. I mean, they got four or five receivers that can go, two young tight ends, addition of Jacobs. So that offense will be very dynamic, just as it was the last half of the season.
Dan, I'm glad we're sticking in this division because I want to look at the Minnesota Vikings quarterback room quickly. Kevin O'Connell, considered by a lot of people to be sort of a QB whisperer. What do you make of their quarterback room? What can he get out of Sam Darnold that maybe other coaches in the past haven't given Darnold the opportunity to achieve? And what kind of concerns do you have about J.J. McCarthy? What's your outlook for him as a pro?
Yeah, I mean, what Kevin can give Sam is a chance. Sam's never had a chance. I mean, he's never had really a good play call, and he's never had good people around him. You know, this is by far the best situation he's ever been in. You know, he did play in San Francisco last year, but outside of mop-up duty. So, you know, one of the six or seven best offensive lines, obviously a trio of wide receivers that are high-end, big-time tight end and Hawk and a back and Aaron Jones from Green Bay. So, like, you've got a ton of talent around him. It's very similar to the scheme that we've talked about a couple of times with that Shanahan tree. So, you know, Kevin's one of the best play callers when it comes to marrying things in the league. So it's really any quarterback I have really high expectations to go and play well in there. I think it'll be Sam. You know, I would expect him to be their starter, but I'm high on JJ. I have been. I was probably a little bit in the minority on that. My concern with JJ is this. JJ is a great kid, and he's one of those people that at that position, he's a pleaser. He wants to do everything the right way. Coach me up. Trevor Lawrence is like this as well. And they become so married to doing things the way that the paper or the playbook tell you to do it that you lose you get stuck on that, and that kind of minimizes some instinctual plays. And so you got to find the balance if you're JJ of like, hey, I'm really committed to doing it that way. But then there's got to be that athletic instinct that kicks in sometimes that maybe forces or allows for some of the misses that were part of his game in college to not be there. Because I think some of the misses in college were like, oh, my gosh, I have to throw this ball on my back right leg, one hitch, and I'm like, and he just gets stuck in it, forces some misses. And I think once he gets rid of that and a comfort level, he's going to be a really good player.
Dan, incredible stuff. Thank you so much for the time. Guys, don't go anywhere. Sharp Money rolls on after this. The 2024 college football season will kick off soon, but don't panic. VSiN is here to help. Our college football betting guide is available now for VSiN Pro subscribers, featuring best bets from writers and on-air personalities, along with team previews for all 134 FBS teams. If you want the best and most comprehensive collection of picks, predictions, and previews, now is the time to become a VSiN Pro subscriber. Download your copy of the VSiN College Football Betting Guide now. All VSiN Pro subscriptions include an all-access pass to VSiN Best Bets, Betting Tools, and Daily Articles. Video too. Sign up today at VSiN.com/subscribe. As we keep it moving here on Sharp Money this Thursday, August 1st, Joe Cirillo here in for Patrick Maher alongside Dustin Sweetelson. And Dustin, I think we both had I won't say a big part for myself. I think you had a bigger part than myself, but we both had a hand in this college football betting guide that is out now. I will say I didn't realize until I was reading that we have previews for all 134 teams.
No. Every team's broken down. We had a lot of our great writers cover each conference exclusively. Matt Eumann's top 25 breakdown. Adam Burke, he teaches you how to make your own power rankings. Steve Mackinnon dives into the numbers unlike anyone else in the business. He's got a couple great pieces, most notably 40 trends to watch for, especially early in the season here. I really enjoyed that piece. So there's a lot. Something for everyone here. You'll become a better. We do these things for, you know, the NFL season. We do it when it comes to college hoops. Our betting guides are worth the price of admission of becoming a VSiN Pro alone. It's one of the best things we do all year long.
Yeah, it absolutely is. Only 40 trends, though. That's very light to me. Just 40? I will say I would not have wanted to be the guy tasked with giving the breakdown for New Mexico State going into this season. I feel like if there was one omission out of 134 that we could have afforded, maybe, you know, New Mexico State, they could go 0-12. That could have been the write-up for the whole team.
It's funny you say that because Jonathan Von Tobel, who we will talk with later, broke down the whole Mountain West Conference.
Well, is New Mexico State? They're
oh,
not.
Oh, wait, you said state.
New Mexico
you're right.
State.
You're right.
Yeah, they're in the Sun Belt. No, yeah. New Mexico, come on, man. You got to know the difference between the Lobos and the Aggies. What are you doing here, Dust?
I was trying to get ahead of myself. Look, this guide is crazy. And for that reason alone, the mistake I just made is why you should get it. Brush up on which teams you're actually looking at.
You got to know the difference between University of and State. They will kill you if you get those two mixed up. Dustin, let's talk about a conference with some teams that are slightly more intriguing than the New Mexico State Aggies. Poor Aggies just catching strays here left and right.
Conference USA, by the way. Conference USA with my boys from
San
Houston.
Are in conference.
Yeah.
Okay.
Sam Houston State was my team last year. I love them. I love Jacksonville State last year. We'll see how year two goes.
Jacksonville State last year was actually a great bet because they were getting points left and right. They were getting a lot of points. They were big dogs, and they didn't have a great record. I don't think they went bowling, but they were in games. I think they were a covering machine last year.
No, they were because they had a good run game. They had Zion Webb, who was like a seventh-year senior. They had a really good defense. They controlled the clock. But some of those Conference USA, like, midweek games were some of the ugliest bets I've ever placed in my life. I kept backing Sam Houston State. They're awesome to start the year, and then they broke my heart as the year went on. They literally never developed an offense.
Justin, you know, I mean, I want to get to power conference teams, but we're going to, I'm sure, spend so much time talking about the big boys, the Georgias, the Ohio States. So I actually want to ask you while we're on this topic, are there any newcomers to college football this year? Like, wasn't Jacksonville State last year was their first year at the FBS ranks, right? Are there any newcomers that catch your attention coming into this season that might be able to, you know, even if they don't produce a winning record and go bowling, might be able to be like Jacksonville State and make some noise, hang around, challenge some opponents?
Kennesaw State is now a Division I FBS school. They were FCS previously. That's in Cobb County, Georgia, an area of the country I'm very familiar with. I don't know if there's any other new teams in that regard. It feels like everyone made the jump the year before. We've got Army.
Oh, is that it?
Army's now part of the AAC, SMU, obviously, the ACC, Cal is in the ACC, and obviously everyone knows the Big Ten and the SEC shifting that went down. So, yeah, I don't know if there's any other new FBS programs out there.
Interesting. Usually there's like three or so every year. I guess this year realignment is the big name of the game. Like, I'm looking at the American standings right now. Obviously there's no standings, but just to get an overview of all the new teams in the American Athletic Conference, I didn't realize UTSA was in the American Athletic Conference. I mean, this realignment and shifting, not just the SEC and the Big Ten, not just the power conferences in the group of five conferences as well. Really intriguing stuff. Hey, let's throw up the odds to win the American Athletic Conference.
Yeah, good luck.
UTSA, rightfully so, pretty near the top there. How do you think Tulane is going to fare now that they've lost Michael Pratt, their quarterback? Do you think Tulane is becoming a team that every now and then you see a group of five team that is kind of a perennial contender among the group of fives for a New Year's Six Bowl for a playoff spot? Is Tulane one of those teams that's now, you know, earned that respect as we should worry about them every single year, year in and year out?
Well, I would, because they have continuity. So a lot of times a program like Tulane is a stepping stone for young coaches to make their next move, right? Well, Willie Fritz is the head coach. He's 64 years old. He's been there a few years now, and he's pretty established. And I happen to know someone who used to be on his offensive staff who told me the best thing about that guy is he hires people and lets them do what he brings them in to do. So that's one thing I really like about Tulane as a program. They have continuity at the head coaching spot, and Willie Fritz is a guy who's been really successful over the years. He will reinvent himself. He will work with what he has, and that's important when you're going to play at a program like that where there's other schools coming in and poaching some of your best players, and every now and then when you do have an NFL player, they're definitely going to capitalize and jump when that chance is in front of them. So because it's Willie Fritz, because he's an older coach not looking for that next job, I actually like Tulane to remain towards the top of this league.
Yeah, I think Tulane, and especially you look at their non-conference schedule this season, right? Kansas State, Oklahoma, two really tough teams, power four. I keep going to say power five teams. Kansas State and Oklahoma, two Power Four conference teams. So I think Tulane, Dustin, is a team that there's potential for them to run the table within the conference. Weeks 2 and 3, they could potentially lose those games and still maybe earn a playoff spot.
See, look, this is why you got to read the guide. Willie Fritz isn't there anymore.
Oh, new coaching staff at Tulane.
Yeah, John Sumrall is there. Why did I think Willie Fritz was still there?
Where is Willie Fritz? Did he retire?
I looked up Tulane head coach. It said Willie Fritz was still there. Thought we were good, but no, he lost the job.
Wow.
Must have retired.
And you see that their win total kind of reflects that. 7.5 going into this season. But still, I like the over 7.5, and that's why it's heavily juiced. You're laying $1.45 for the over 7.5 there.
Yeah,
but
Fritz is at Houston. Fritz is at Houston.
Interesting jump. I don't know if that's – I mean, I know you're going power conference. I don't know, Dustin, if that's the jump that some people might say. Tulane's got a lot of money back in that program. And Houston, is it crazy to say it's a basketball school now?
Yeah, but you should be able to win at Houston because they have money. Dana Holgorsen underachieved there. I don't know what went on in the Holgorsen era at Houston.
Well, they're projected for what? They're like bottom dwellers in the Big 12, no?
No, but they have money. My point is there should be the resources to be a winning football program, but it hasn't worked over the years, didn't work in the AAC, and now they're up against it, against a tougher league. I don't know what to make of Houston going forward because Holgorsen shouldn't have been as bad as he was at the end of his tenure there.
Yeah, absolutely agree with you on that. Looking at other Group of Five schools, Dustin, does anyone else really stand out to you? Obviously, Liberty. I think they have the highest win total of anyone in the country.
Yeah, look, they're a heavy favorite to win that league, and rightfully so. They return a special dual-threat quarterback. But outside of that, I'm not as locked in, on, obviously, per this conversation of the Group of Five teams right now. That's not where I'm at with my prep. That league feels like it's so obvious Liberty is going to win that maybe we're due for a surprise, but you look across the board, all the VSiN experts pretty much have Liberty winning it, and rightfully so. That's what they've established over the last few years. They've been a great program.
Look at this schedule, and I know, you know, I think you and I are on the same page. The Group of Five isn't exactly what's piquing our interest right now at this point in the summer, but I just figured while we were talking about Tulane and the American Athletic Conference, why not point out the fact that I see 12-0. I see greater than a 50% chance that Liberty goes 12-0 here, Dustin. I mean, would you take the over on a number even as high as 10.5?
Oh, no, I don't. Because I don't want to have to live and die with the chaos that is these random schools playing for their biggest game of the year is to just knock off this Liberty program. I don't want to deal with that headache. It probably will happen, but I'm not riding that emotional roller coaster.
Well, I'll tell you this. There aren't many guarantees in life outside of death and taxes. UMass has a win on your schedule. That's as close as it comes to a guarantee in college football. Liberty ain't going to, UMass ain't the one that's going to knock them off. Guys, back to the NFL when we come back. A look at not the best, but the worst head coaches in the league here on Sharp Money. Make sure you head over to VSiN.com today because, like we've been talking about all show, the new 2024 college football guide is out. VSiN.com, where you can get best bets, betting splits, exclusive articles, and so much more. Don't waste time. Head there now as we get ready to wrap up hour one of Sharp Money right here on this Thursday, August 1st. Joe Cirillo in all week for Patrick Maher alongside Dustin Sweetelson. Very college football heavy show today. Talk some NFL with our guy Dan Orlovsky earlier. Dustin, wasn't that a great spot?
Yeah, I think he is number one for me when it comes to doing this business right, having strong opinions, having good, obviously, analysis and reason behind the opinions. And he's awesome on TV. The only issue with him is the no seasoning on chicken thing. That's the only thing I can't get my head around.
Yeah, you know, I've known Dan for about 6 or 7 years, and I've never asked him this question because I don't want his answer to taint my view of him, but he just seems like a medium well guy for steak. And I do, it's true. I lose respect for people if they have it, if they order it anywhere past medium.
No, he also feels like he doesn't hate well done because he thinks that char and the burn is flavor.
Oh, Well, I don't want to put words in Dan's mouth, yeah. But I'm just going to say I hope it isn't true, Dustin. I hope it isn't true because I'm a rare plus guy when it comes to my red meat. You know, one thing that Dan does, though, and, you know, he's been in the league 12 years, he likes to build a lot of guys up, right? It's pretty rare that you'll hear him, even when he's criticizing someone, do it in a harsh way. But, Dustin, we're no strangers to harsh lists or harsh criticism. So let's take a look at the new USA Today list of the 10 worst head coaches in the National Football League right now.
There's a lot to unpack here. So let's lay it out. There's just a lot. You lay it out and we can react.
Yeah, so we each made a list of our 5 worst head coaches. But if you look at this USA Today list of the 10 worst, it's interesting. First off, right off the bat, the first thing that stands out to me, Dustin, that I disagree with, you can't put a rookie head coach on this list. Like, how can Gerard Mayo be the 3rd worst head coach when he hasn't coached a game yet? Like, that makes no – Brian Callahan, Gerard Mayo. Let's throw the list up there. Because on the backstage for me, it's cut off at 8. Dave Canales made it. These guys have not coached a single game as a head coach in the National Football League, and you're going to already put them top 10 worst? Make it make sense.
No, I think when you're evaluating this, there have to be some parameters that you allow some leeway to wait and see approach. Like, that was the big thing for me as we put together each of our own top fives was, you know, there are guys that I think probably are, but I have to give them an opportunity to prove right or wrong. I can't just establish it without them really getting a fair shake at this. Like Antonio Pierce, I have questions about him in a full season coming off that interim tag. There was a lot of emotion and energy in that shift of power here in Las Vegas. But I have questions about how he preps for a full season because it's very easy to go and be the opposite of Josh McDaniels and get the players to respond. It's another thing now to attack the rest of the league and keep that job.
Yeah, I'm really intrigued by Antonio Pierce coming into his first full season at the helm in Vegas. You know, look, obviously I might be a little partial as a Giants fan. I love this guy. He was a captain on that Super Bowl team, Super Bowl 42, knocking off the undefeated Pats. But what strikes me with Pierce is that he might not be the offensive guru that a Mike McDaniel is or that a Kevin O'Connell is, but he's a leader of men. He knows defense as good as anyone, and he knows how to lead a locker room, which I think sometimes, look at Cliff Kingsbury, right? We get so caught up in these offensive masterminds and the X's and O's and the Madden plays. And these guys don't know how to coach men, how to lead 53 men in their locker room. I think that's something Antonio Pierce has that can't be taught, you know, like X's and O's can. So let's take a look at my list of the 5 worst head coaches. I might have a couple surprises in there for you. Some guys who have been in the playoffs last couple of years, some guys who have turned in some good regular season records last couple of seasons. But Dustin, for me, the 5th worst head coach, and again, this omits rookies completely. No rookie head coaches. Pierce, we haven't seen a full season. He's omitted from this. So you're dealing with 20-something instead of 32 options. Mike McDaniel, to me, is the 5th worst head coach in the National Football League. This guy has not shown us that he's a leader. He is brilliant. He is incredibly intelligent. He is a creative offensive mastermind. To me, Mike McDaniel is not a good head coach.
Real quick, let's stop for a second. I want to unpack each one of these. I am surprised that you feel that way after what you just said about Antonio Pierce, because I do feel, while it's not much bravado, Mike McDaniel is certainly a leader of men in his own way.
Do you think that Mike McDaniel, if he had to get in one of his players' faces and yell at him and ream him, do you think anyone on that roster, outside of maybe a rookie who's worried about job security, would take him seriously? Because I don't. I think if Mike McDaniel went toe-to-toe with a vet, that the vet would laugh at him, frankly.
Well, why does he have to yell? Why can't he pull him aside and lead in his own way, which is speaking to him like an adult, right, and explaining the situation? It feels like he's a guy who's pretty vulnerable with his team. Like I said, not a lot of machismo and bravado, but he has his own different way of doing it. He may not be a traditional-style head coach, but I think he's a solid head coach. I like Mike McDaniel.
You don't think that lack of toughness leads to what I think is a really soft Dolphins team, a team that went 2-3 down the stretch last year when they had that division locked up, a team that didn't have a good win last year. Outside of that late season win at home against Dallas, and Dallas and Miami are very similar, their profiles last year, very low strength of victory. They beat the teams they were supposed to beat. So Miami in that matchup with Dallas got the best of them. What was their next best win? Week one against the Chargers? I mean, they put up 70 on the Broncos last year, but a good team comes to town and they couldn't beat a good team. They collapsed down the stretch. They collapsed in the postseason. I don't love it. Number four for me, similar reasoning, Kevin O'Connell. Offensive guy, I don't trust him as a leader. I don't trust what he's done in terms of putting together a complete coaching staff around him and a complete roster. Minnesota's defense the last 2 years has been abysmal. Now, I left Brian Daboll off this list. He was included on the USA Today list. To me, Daboll gets the edge because 2 years ago in the postseason, now head-to-head doesn't determine this list, but O'Connell had a much more talented roster. Daboll's guys were better prepared. Daboll schemed better for that postseason game. I don't think Kevin O'Connell, Dustin, is a good head coach.
Yeah, I'm giving him a TBD. And while being a Kirk Cousins guy, I want to see how he reinvents himself. I want to see how he does it with the quarterback he picked, right? I think that's why he's not on my list, because he inherited Kirk Cousins when he took the job. Let's see what he does. He thinks he found a guy in J.J. McCarthy. Let's watch him develop him, and that's when I'll judge him fairly.
All right, I'll do 3-2-1 here, a kind of rapid fire. I'll be pretty quick because they all have the same overwhelming general problem. Their defensive coordinators trapped in head coaches' bodies. Robert Saleh, number three for me. Matt Eberflus, number two. Dennis Allen, number one. Dennis Allen, I mean, enough of this guy already, right? I feel like he is the easy number one on this list. He was USA Today's number one. I think I know more about NFL offenses than he does. He is just, to me, he's not a good leader. I don't get the Dennis Allen experiment. Eberflus, I think he should have been gone last year. I think Chicago had a great offseason. Brought in a lot of great weapons, set Caleb up for success. I think the only thing they could have done better is get a better head coach in town. And then Robert Saleh, we all know, I mean, he's probably on the hottest seat in the league this season. So much riding on the return of Aaron Rodgers and the Jets' success. But Saleh has done nothing but disappoint time in and time out. I mean, he's looked clueless on the sideline at times. They caught him that Black Friday game against Miami, didn't even have the headset on. It's been a disaster there.
So I left Saleh off my list. Here's why. I gained a lot of respect for him last year. I actually thought he handled a lot of the post-Rodgers world very well. And it was a difficult season based on the expectations they had. That's why he's not on my list. I'll go quickly through mine. Number five, Sean McDermott. There was a movie called Good Luck Chuck back in the day with Dane Cook, where Dane Cook would go out with women and they'd find their true love after him. Sean McDermott is the guy before the guy. He's Buck Showalter. You move on from him after he establishes an identity for your team and you bring someone else in to get him over the top. Number four is Doug Peterson. That vanilla ice cream licking weirdo somehow lucked himself into a Super Bowl, and nothing we have seen since makes any sense on how he is a good football coach. Number three
What's wrong with vanilla ice cream?
It's the most boring ice cream flavor out there. Number three for me is Todd Bowles. They won the division last year. The division stinks. Look at the track record. This guy is not a head coach. He's a great coordinator. Number two for me is Dennis Allen. Dennis Allen probably should be number one on most people's list, but I don't understand the fascination with my number one, and it's more about how is this the guy that Jerry Jones believes can take the Cowboys back to being America's team? Mike McCarthy. Mike McCarthy is just 1997 out there as a head coach. There's nothing innovative. There's nothing special. There is nothing new. There is no evolving with Mike McCarthy. He is Andy Reid without the creativity. He is just there. That is my top five worst head coaches.
Andy Reid without the grade. Did you just call him fat?
Yes. That's exactly what I was doing. He's a fat guy with no personality, which is the worst.
That is a great list. I want to get back to that and get back to the vanilla ice cream discussion later on. Hour two of Sharp Money up next.